You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
Happy Soggy Monday to you here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. Yeah, he's back after a nice long weekend. And unfortunately, the Phillies didn't do too well on the day he was there, right, buddy?
Yeah, no, it was unfortunate, but it was still a great time. I had a great time with my grandmother. The seats were great. A little bit chilly.
Yeah, definitely,
definitely windy. But other than that, it was a great time for my first opening day. Besides the Phillies actually winning, I wouldn't have changed a thing about it. It was a great time.
I'm glad that you had fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's always nice. And you had nice seats.
Yeah, no, section 110, row 35, seats 11 and 12. So we were back quite a bit, and we were underneath the canopy, I guess.
Okay.
And I told my grandmother, hey, when we come in the summer, if you want to sit here, we usually sit on third base, but because the way the sun revolves around the stadium, by like the third, fourth inning, we're in the shade. But I'm like, if you want to sit here again, I could find tickets for here, and we could be under the shade the whole time.
Oh, nice.
Up to her. So
nice.
I'm sure we'll be sitting there again.
Well, glad to have you back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Missed you.
Missed you too, Bill.
Yeah, I'll bet. Let's see. Bill Saunders versus Phillies. Okay. Our phone number is 0610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459. Our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And, of course, our email address remains the same at feedback@830weeu.com. All right, let's take a look at today's top three topics. If you think car headlights are getting brighter, you're not alone. We'll explain why that's the case. President Biden is slammed for designating Easter Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility, even though it's been celebrated on March 31st for several years now. And a federal judge is criticized for commenting about a current case involving Donald Trump during an interview on CNN. And coming up at 11:30 this morning, I'll be joined by Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan. All right, let's get started. Let's start off with that headlight story. I found this rather interesting because I, like a lot of other people, here I thought it was just me. You know, that the headlights were getting brighter, and it was blinding me. And I thought, maybe it's because I'm getting older, and I am a macular degeneration suspect. My eye doctor has been following that with me. And I thought, maybe that is the case. I also have the starts of glaucoma. Boy, I'm falling apart, aren't I?
No, I think you're just going through changes, think would be the
Yeah, but so many changes. So I thought maybe it was one of those, because the eye doctor had been telling me, be aware the minute you start seeing a halo effect in your vision, that means it's time to do something about the glaucoma. I can't think of what the name of it is.
Do you have a... What's it start with?
That I can't even think of. See, I told you, getting old, it's just getting to me.
It's just the Monday.
I am a glaucoma suspect, but this isn't glaucoma that I'm talking about. People know what I'm talking about. It's just I can't think of the name of it right off. Anyway, with all that said, I found out, and I had a sigh of relief when I read this in the Wall Street Journal. I'm not alone in thinking headlights are getting brighter. And it's because of LED lights that are popping up in new cars. This started around 15 years ago. They grew in popularity, according to the Wall Street Journal, because they tend to offer better road illumination, Bill, get your mouth in order here, and are longer lasting than other types of headlights, according to SAE International, which is formerly known as the Society of Automotive Engineers. The number of cars with LED headlights has been steadily rising in recent years, and with it, frustration among drivers. In 2020, 54% of new cars in the U.S. had LED lights, by last year, it had grown to 76%, according to an analysis by industry tracker TrendForce. LED lights can be confused with high beams, which is something that I've always thought, you know, oncoming cars, I thought they had their high beams on, and I would flash mine at them to tell them to bring it down. Well, oncoming drivers often flash their own high beams as if to say, hey, man, your brights are on, but the offending car's brights aren't on. Their lights are just very, very bright and possibly not aligned correctly, according to this Wall Street Journal article. Suddenly, finding headlights so aggravating is leading motorists to get their eyes checked, blurt out expletives while alone in the car, sounds like me, and question whether they're having age-related issues with nighttime driving before turning 50. See, so I'm not alone here. Some swear LED lights are fine, good even, as they make it easier to see things like pedestrians. The angle of headlight points is the real problem, according to this article, and everyone should get their alignment checked. There are also drivers of cars with LED lights who feel bad. They want you to understand they're aware they're blinding you, but they can't do anything about their lights, so could you please stop flashing your brights at them, they're asking. It's making it hard for them to see. Michelle Cristiani, a teacher at Portland Community College in Oregon, age 50, was so bothered by oncoming headlights that she assumed something was wrong with her eyes. She asked her eye doctor about her difficulty with headlights and says the doctor implied it was part of getting older. But Cristiani says her teenagers have complained about oncoming headlights too. A National Highway Transportation Safety Administration spokeswoman says the agency recently received a petition for rulemaking to consider setting a maximum photometric intensity for low beams on headlamps. The petition is currently under review, and I hope it gets into law. Those are my words, by the way. Mark Baker, president of the Soft Lights Foundation, which is a nonprofit group, says he spends his days advocating for more regulation of LED headlights, keeping in touch with industry and government agencies. He isn't convinced that mass headlight realignment or widespread adoption of adaptive headlights are going to solve the problem, however. He says, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there's an industry, auto industry ecosystem, that is, that's like an echo chamber. He says everybody is mystified by why they are being blinded, and it's not our eyes. So there, I feel much better now knowing it's not just me, but they do need to do something about it.
Yeah, no, I was, like, when you brought this topic up, I was thinking, I can't stand the LED lights driving. There's a ton of back roads, going to where I live in Douglasville, and I take those all the time.
Uh-huh.
And usually that's when you get and when it's really dark outside, that's when you get the really bright LEDs. Every time I find myself having to force myself to then look at the white side, that white line,
yes.
So I'm not going blind.
Yes, right.
And I found, like, the worst ones in my experience have been Jeeps have the worst LED lights, and those trucks that are, like, elevated that sit higher than
most cars,
and
yeah.
It's, like, blinding. And I do the same thing, like, how it referenced in the article where, you know, I think your high beams are on, so I flash them, and then they turn on their high beams. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't see even more. So, yeah, no, they definitely, at least in, like, this area, like, with all the back roads of Berks County, I feel like that's when they're really detrimental. But, it's interesting that that article says that it's the alignment of the lights, not the lights themselves.
Right.
I guess I didn't really think of that, but I mean, how that, like, if you want to get that aligned and you go to a auto service place, that has to be kind of expensive to do, because I know where the light is, it's pretty expensive to, like, change a light in a car.
Right.
So I can't imagine just to realign it's that cheaper either.
Well,
I wouldn't know because I haven't. I don't think I've ever had that procedure done on a car, but I don't think that would be, you know.
It's not that difficult because there's something, I believe, on the wall of their garages that they will turn the lights on and align it up with the marks that are on the wall, or so I've been told. And it's simply taking a screwdriver and adjusting the holder of the headlamp.
Okay.
To readjust it. But still, I think that may be part of the problem, but still those LED lights,
yeah.
Even if they're aligned properly, I think are extremely bright.
Does your car have LED lights?
If I do, I'm not, to my knowledge, I haven't insulted any oncoming driver.
Same here. Same here.
Because I never got my lights. I never got somebody flashing their high beams at me.
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't know whether mine's doing, but I don't think the car I drive is, you know, that bad of an offender. Now, again, I'm the one driving it most of the time, so
right,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But even when, like, if I'm going to a family gathering, I have to take a separate car, and I know one of my parents is driving the car. They don't seem that bad, but that's, again, they're usually behind me. We're not going opposite sides of the road where you would be affected by it.
Yeah, now mine's a 2019 model car, so it might have LED lights, but I wouldn't know. I'd have to check. I guess maybe the car's manual would let me know if I've got LED lights or not.
Yeah.
It's got to go in for 50. What is it? What am I coming up on? 55 or 56,000 miles. And so when I take it back into the garage, I'll ask them if those are LED lights.
Yeah, yeah.
I know when I had an SUV, I felt so bad. One year, my parents and my younger sister and I were going out to dinner. And for some reason, we took separate cars. And at the time, I was driving an SUV that was much higher than my parents' car. And I was driving behind them because I wanted to make sure that I wanted to make sure that they got there safely because my dad was going downhill health-wise at that point. And unfortunately, what I didn't realize, I kept asking my sister, why is my father slowing down all the time? And it turns out my headlights were bothering him the whole time.
Oh, man.
And I really felt bad when he told me at the restaurant, he said, you blinded me the entire time. And I said, oh, sorry, Dad. I was driving behind you because I wanted to make sure you got to the restaurant okay. You know, because if they're behind you, it's not that easy to see if they're doing okay.
Like, yeah, if you get out of a turn quicker and they get stuck by a car. Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, well. I'm still trying to think of what that is that I impair. Somebody help me out here. On the thing that goes over your eye,
yeah, shoot.
It's a growth over your eye.
Shoot us a text or send us
an
email.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to drive me nuts all day long trying to figure out what it is, and I just can't think of it. Anyway, on to something else here. Let's talk about technology. Here's something else that social media is causing now, and I just wish we never had social media. I'm sorry, I'm not a friend of social media, but anyway, this article in the Wall Street Journal pertains to a new option on Snapchat. You might have heard about this, Sean. It's a feature that lets paying users see their position in their friend's digital orbits. In other words, it allows them to see whether their friend considers them a close friend or not. If you're and it's literally an orbit. They're applying planet names, I guess, to where you stand in relation to your friend. So if you're Mercury, you're a close friend.
Okay, so they're...
Pluto, you know you're not that close.
So are they implementing like all the zodiac signs as well? Or
I have no idea.
Okay. I use Snapchat. That's the way I keep in contact with some friends. It's not my favorite. I wish I could tell all my friends, just text me instead. Because
right.
That's the sole reason I use Snapchat, just to text people.
Well, why don't you use the text on your phone?
People I know just prefer Snapchat. I don't know what it is. It's been that way. That's what all my college friends have. They're big Snapchat people, and that's the only way I can keep in contact with them, and it drives me insane.
All right, I'll let you answer the phone there. But this is Snapchat Plus. It's an addition to the app, and it's got a subscription price of $4 a month for you to take part in it. And according to the Wall Street Journal, subscribers can check where they rank with a particular friend based on how often that friend communicates with them. The result is automatically rendered in a solar system metaphor. And like I just said to Sean, are you Mercury, the planet closest to your friend? Great. If you're something like Pluto, that's a bad sign. And a lot of kids, They quote a 15-year-old in this article, Callie Schellinger, from Yorktown, New York, who said the following. A lot of kids my age have trouble differentiating best friends on Snapchat from actual best friends in real life. And that's the problem here. I mean, even take a look at Facebook and how many friends a young person has on Facebook. How many of those people are really friends or just people who linked up with you because they saw something that was of interest to them, but they're really not, they really don't care about you or know anything else about you. You know, and it makes you feel popular, but are you really?
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting point. I mean, I have a bunch of online friends, so I guess that goes in tow, that I met playing a bunch of video games, especially during COVID. And I've actually met them numerous times. We've all hung out a couple times. So I would consider them real friends. But Snapchat, I think it's definitely – it's weird because it is a way to keep in touch with people. But at the same time, like you said, it's a paying option to do this.
Right.
Because they introduced Snapchat Premium like a year or 2 years ago. And I don't know anybody who's paying for that because there's some things you could do with Snapchat Premium that you used to be able to do years ago when Snapchat was first enabled.
Right.
But yeah, it's different. Also, the caller, I want to shout out Jean. She said the word we're looking for is cataracts.
There we go.
So thank you, Jean.
Oh, Jean, thank you.
Yep. She called in. She's like, the word you want to tell Bill is cataracts. I'm like, thank you so much.
Oh, Jean, with your help, I'm going to sleep tonight now because otherwise I'd be tossing and turning trying to figure out what it cataracts. That thank you.
Yeah, now after she said that, I'm like, wow, I even know what that is, and I couldn't think of it, so. I'm going to blame Monday for this.
No, it's. I wish I could, but no, I just had a mental block to it, and Gene, thank you so much. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you setting me straight on that. Now I can't see what I'm reading here. No, I'm just kidding. Back to this piece from the Wall Street Journal. More than 20 million U.S. teens use Snapchat. Though most don't pay for Snapchat Plus, which is the app that we're talking about here. The young adults the Wall Street Journal spoke to with those paid accounts said they've seen friendships splinter and young love wither due to the knowledge that someone else ranks higher on the app. See, this is where this is very dangerous. Some say teens have signed up for Snapchat Plus just to check their status with a crush. Like other social media features, Snapchat's solar system was created to get people to engage more with the app. And while it can be turned off, it's on by default. Well, now lawmakers, doctors, and parents are giving fuller attention to these apps and how they broadly affect kids' mental health. New legislation and lawsuits have pressed tech companies to better protect minors on social media, if not block them from it outright. U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murphy weighed in on this. He issued an advisory last June on the effects of social media on young mental health. Adolescents are susceptible to peer pressure, opinions, and comparison, he says. Well, the social hierarchy that's playing out on Snapchat has parents vexed. One mother of a Snapchat user said the following, "You have to wonder if all this fear of being left out is part of the mental health problems kids are facing." Well, a Snapchat spokeswoman said the friend solar system is one of more than 30 features on Snapchat Plus. She said most are intended to help users customize the app, and all can be easily turned off. A friend solar system ranking isn't visible to others. Users can only see their position in relation to a friend and can't see who is closer or farther away. Snapchat Plus subscribers can pin friends they want to appear closer. The company has no plans to turn off the feature, but the spokeswoman says it's always open to feedback. She says, "We always prioritize our community's well-being," adding that the majority of the 7 million Snapchat Plus subscribers worldwide are over the age of 18. But even so, with all the issues we're having with kids in school today, issues that weren't around, I swear to you, weren't around when I was in school. And that's because you didn't have the internet. You didn't have Snapchat. You didn't have Facebook. I swear this is causing more problems for our society than it's worth.
Well, what's interesting, again, now that I'm thinking about it with that solar system feature, what they used to have back in the day, back in my high school. So close to 10 years now, which is crazy to think about.
I'm sorry, between you and Greg, Greg used that last week and I laughed.
Well, I've been around since Snapchat's inception, so I've seen a change. But what they used to have.
I've been around since the wheel's inception, pal. Or at least it, it feels that
fair
way.
Point. So what Snapchat used to have before they even thought of being like a subscription-based thing where you could buy stuff, what you used to be able to have is you used to have a best friends list. And I think it was like five people you could have up there. You'd have your best friend at number one, and who, two, three, four, five, and that's how you would get like streaks. And that's how that's the, so what you, to get a streak is you snap pictures back and forth. People have conversations and whatnot. So if
all right, let's not get too detailed on Snapchat.
But they used to have that, and that went away. So I guess now they're bringing it back at this planet system. I thought the best friend list was pretty straightforward, but now this planet stuff going on. But it's just crazy that they're bringing it back. And one, they're making it behind a payroll. And two, it's not a straightforward list anymore. Very weird.
No, and I'm rather concerned about the spokeswoman's attitude. We're not going to change this. You know, I mean, unless the government forces them to, you know. All right, we're going to take a break on this Monday morning. We'll be back with more of Feedback here on Air Town Square in just a bit. Stay with us.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
There are times computers have a mind of their own. My apologies for that little interruption there earlier with ABC News. Oh, my. I guess computers even suffer from Monday morning blues. Who knows? Anyway, coming up during the 11 o'clock hour, I'm going to be joined by Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan. And then on Wednesday at 9:30, State Senator Scott Martin will be here. He is the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee there in Harrisburg. So a couple of folks, one from Congress, another from the General Assembly, will be here this week. So we'll be talking with Congresswoman Houlihan about some things going on in Congress currently. And then on Wednesday, we'll ask Senator Martin for his take on Governor Shapiro's budget proposal, among other things. All right. Well, over the weekend, there was quite a controversy. Well, before I get started with this, I got to share with you something that I heard at a restaurant over the weekend that really made me wonder, what's going on today? A young lady working at the restaurant, she's in her 20s, I guess early 20s at most. They were talking about Easter, and the question that she asked just totally blew me away. She said, "Is Easter held every year on Sunday?" And I thought to myself, what? Are you kidding me? This goes hand in hand with what we were talking about last week about Easter. And I just couldn't believe, well, maybe I do, that a young person today wouldn't even know that Easter is held on Sunday every year. But anyway, the reason why I bring that up is because I want to share with you the controversy that the White House landed in over the weekend here. Let's start off with this article that I got from Fox. Then I'll share with you the White House's response. President Biden was slammed on social media Saturday after marking Easter Sunday, the most solemn Christian holiday, as Transgender Day of Visibility. Prominent Christians, politicians, and commenters flooded social media platforms with criticism about the announcement from the White House. And while March 31st has been designated to honor the transgender movement since Biden took office, this year it falls on Easter Sunday, one of the most important days for Christians as they celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So the National Transgender Day of Visibility is always held on March 31st every year. But we all know Easter changes. It's always held on a Sunday. I want to make sure that young lady knows. But the date changes every year. This year, it just so happens that Easter Sunday and Transgender Day of Visibility fell on the same day. Well, this is what the president said over the weekend in a statement that was released by the White House. On Transgender Day of Visibility, we honor the extraordinary courage and contributions of transgender Americans and reaffirm our nation's commitment to forming a more perfect union where all people are created equal and treated equally throughout their lives. The statement goes on to say, "Today we send a message to all transgender Americans. You are loved. You are heard. You are understood. You belong. You are America. And my entire administration and I have your back." And it goes on to say, "Now, therefore, I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2024, as Transgender Day of Visibility." Well, a couple of his critics weighed in on this. They took to X, formerly known as Twitter, starting with Representative Alex Mooney, a Republican from West Virginia, who wrote the following. "Joe Biden has proclaimed Easter Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility. What a coincidence on the timing, right? This is a direct assault on Christianity," he wrote. "Yet another attack on religion and traditions by this administration." Then there's Tennessee Republican Congresswoman Diana Harshbarger, who said the announcement was intentional and slammed it as a blatant disregard. She said, "This is a direct assault on Christianity. It's evident the left is determined to undermine our religion and traditions." She went on to write on X, "This isn't just blatant disregard, it's intentional." Conservative commentator Benny Johnson shared a screenshot of the White House statement, writing alongside it, "What a slap in the face to all Christians in America." And a recent poll from Pew Research found just 13% of Americans think of Biden as very religious, while 41% say he is somewhat religious, and another 44% of those polled say he's not at all or not too religious. All right, with that said, here's the White House response to all of this. They responded later on Saturday to the criticism centered around Transgender Day of Visibility. White House spokesperson Andrew Bates said, and I quote, "As a Christian who celebrates Easter with family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American." Bates went on to say, "Sadly, it's unsurprising politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country with cruel, hateful, and dishonest rhetoric. President Biden will never abuse his faith for political purposes or for profit. The Transgender Day of Visibility was first recognized 15 years ago to celebrate transgender people and point to the discrimination they face. Easter lands on a different date each year." Well, could he have done something about that? Could the president have simply designated another day for Transgender Visibility Day or Day of Visibility rather than allow it to fall on Easter Sunday so that he didn't have to face that criticism? I open the phones to you and ask for your opinion on this. 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459, or you can text your opinion to us at 484-650-3373. We'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square. Yeah, we got a couple of topics here on the table for you to talk about. We've got a lot of people on the phone right now who want to talk about the Transgender Day of Visibility, and another one who wants to talk about the LED headlight story. So let's go to the phones right now, starting with Irene in Burnville, who wants to weigh in on this controversy about the Transgender Day of Visibility that fell on Easter this year. Irene, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. I think part of the problem with this whole thing, he banned having, I guess they have an art contest with the Easter egg roll.
Mm-hmm.
and he banned any religious symbols.
Right.
I think that didn't help the whole situation. And I heard a comment, and I just wanted to prove it to myself. How many transgender days are there in the year? Because even August is Transgender History Month, which I didn't know. And there's a bunch of other ones.
Yeah, I didn't even know about this Transgender Day of Visibility until this controversy arose over the weekend.
Okay, because I did a Google. And it's like 22 plus days are transgender plus LGBTQ plus whatever days in the year, including a couple months.
22, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and like I said, I honestly think that if he would have, you know, wouldn't have pushed back on the religion part at the Easter egg roll, probably not, but... I think it might have been a little bit more acceptance of it.
Yeah, and I don't understand why the Transgender Day of Visibility had to be on the same day as it's been every other year. Why not? Because of the fact that there was this conflict with an extremely religious day, a very holy day for Christians. Why not change it this year to accommodate that so that there isn't this brouhaha?
And like I said, Easter's one day. Transgender History Month is a month in August, which I didn't know.
How about that? All right, Irene.
And can I make one quick comment about the headlights?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why don't you ask Ron Poplawski when he calls in about the adjustment?
Yeah, I'm going to.
Okay.
You and I, like minds, yep, I'm going to talk. Funny you should say that because that was on my mind as we were talking about that earlier. I'm going to ask him that tomorrow. Because a friend of mine told me, who owns a garage, told me that that is how they adjust headlights, and so I'll have to see if that's the standard.
Yeah, you know, that's what I heard too, but I don't know if that's with the Okay, my mind just went blank.
That's okay. Hey, welcome to the boat.
I knew, like, the old headlights, that's how they adjusted them, but I didn't know if that's how they do it with the new ones.
Yeah, we'll find out tomorrow when I talk with Ron.
Oh, in Brazil, National Day of Transgender Visibility is January 29th. Each country has a separate one.
Oh, I got you. Okay, Brazil has its own. Okay, got you. And theirs is on the 29th, huh?
January.
January 29th.
Right.
How about that?
I put in, and on Wikipedia, it was like every country has a bunch of them. The U.S., of course, has most.
Interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that with us today, Irene. Appreciated the call.
Okay.
All right, you take care.
All right.
Bye-bye now. Let's go to Denver. Eileen wants to weigh in on this topic. Eileen, thanks for calling in today.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I believe in Christ, and I believe that he wanted us to love one another. And I would like to see us unify America through common threads. So I looked and saw that Biden did give a message to Christians this Sunday as well. It would be nice if, rather than dividing us up into small little sections and subsections, if we could celebrate or unify over patriotism and God's love for us. Lots of celebrations come hand over hand on one another. It doesn't really matter what the day is. Theirs is always going to be March 31st, and Easter is going to fall as it does at the end of Lent and Passover. So
the bottom line here, Eileen, am I hearing you right that you didn't have a problem with it falling on the same day as Easter this year?
I would have had a problem if he had not celebrated or sent a message to Christians.
Okay.
And just signaled out one subsection of the country, regardless of what it was. I'm a Christian, and I believe wholeheartedly that my path is through Jesus Christ and his forgiveness of my sins. So one of those is to not judge others.
Absolutely. Sure.
Yes. And so I have to stand by that, although sometimes, you know, I understand some issues better than others. I just think fighting over a day is not something we need to fight over. I'll celebrate Easter. Anybody else can celebrate what they want to do.
All right, Eileen. Thank you for weighing in. I appreciate you taking the time to call into the show today.
You're welcome, Bill. Have a good day.
You too now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And let's go to Bill in Fleetwood, who wants to talk about the LED headlight story. Bill, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I remember years ago, that was part of state inspection. Every time you got your car inspected, they were supposed to check your headlights.
I thought that was the case.
And every inspection station was supposed to have either the screen or the newer type adjustment, you know, for your headlights. Now, I don't know if that's still, because the headlights are actually different now. They used to be, remember, the sealed beam? It was actually a sealed headlight. Now it's almost like a bulb inside of a chamber. So it's different now. But years ago, it was with inspection. Every time you were supposed to have that done.
No, I thought that was the case, and I'm glad that you brought that up today. And I have to wonder if that's the case in every state.
I think that's different. Some states don't even have inspection.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you don't get your car inspected in some states. I don't think that's a good idea either.
Wow, okay. Yeah, with this being a national publication, the Wall Street Journal, their alignment comment may be referring to cars in other states rather than here. To be honest with you, Bill, when you drive, do you find these LED headlights brighter than the regular headlights?
Oh yeah, I do. They bother me too. They bother me too. Yeah. But I don't know if they're adjustable. You know, your show on a Thursday night, Idle Talk, they do state inspections there, so they would definitely know.
Yeah, I'm going to have Ron Poplosky from Poplosky Auto Service on tomorrow morning at 9:30, and I'm going to pose this issue with him. I think he's listening now, so he's probably going to prepare for tomorrow. But I'll definitely discuss it with him when he calls in tomorrow.
Yeah, they'd also know, yeah. I think it's a good idea we have state inspection, because otherwise you climb in that car and go, and you have no idea whether you're safe or not.
Yeah, this is true. It drives me crazy when I'm on a backcountry road that doesn't have white lines along the side of the road, especially when we're talking about a road that has no street lights on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's... And, you know, misaligned, if they're too low, then you don't see the deer or something laying in the road, even if you have your high beams on. So it's bad if they're too high, and it's also bad if they're too low.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because you don't see the deer, and even if you have your high beams on, you don't see the deer. You don't see a piece of metal or a piece of wood laying in the road.
So you don't have enough time to brake. You don't have the warning. That's a good point.
The distance that you can see. And then you're right on top of whatever the thing is in your way, and then you don't have time to stop. So, and even if you change anything at the car, you know, if the back end comes up a little bit, the front end goes down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that affects the adjustment of your lights. That's why they adjusted them, you know, every inspection years ago.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm learning things here. I'm learning things. Bill, thank you. I appreciate your input.
Because I remember years ago, if you took a lot of people, you know, you took two big guys, say they both weighed 250, they climbed in the back seat. Those headlights were up in the trees. I remember seeing that happen.
I got to go for a commercial break, but Bill, you made my day with that comment. Thanks for the call today, buddy.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
You
bye.
Got it. Bye-bye now. I love it. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more feedback on this soggy Monday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
As we wrap up the first hour of this Monday edition of Feedback, we'll be back with hour number two, but right now it's news time with Radio PA and ABC. And our own Bob McCool will be here with a check on sports to round out the top of the hour. It's all here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond. News Talk 830 WEEU in Reading. Thank you so much for making us part of your day. Stay with us. We'll be back with hour number two in just a bit.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of Feedback, your on-air town square, here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky, and our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And if you want to text us your email or text us your your opinion... Oh, Bill, what's wrong with me today? I thank goodness this is a short work week for me. That's all I can say. I'm so glad I'm off for Thursday and Friday. Anyway, our dedicated text line, if you want to text in your opinion, is 484-650-3373. And I blended that in with our email address, by the way, feedback@830weeu.com. We're on Twitter and Feedback and Facebook. There we go again. We're on Twitter and Facebook too, are we not?
Yep. For Twitter, it's at the at symbol Feedback WEEU, and then on Facebook, it's at Feedback WEEU.
Oh, too much for me to remember, I'm telling you.
Hey, like you said, you got a short work week this week.
Yeah, thank goodness, and it probably won't mean a thing, but anyway, I'm going to take advantage of it anyway.
Yeah, I hope so. You deserve it.
So blame me for this weather. Every time I take off, I swear to you, every time I take vacation, it rains the whole week. And now they're calling for nice weather on Friday.
Yeah, that's a one day. That's a day you're not here. Go figure.
Yeah. So, but my birthday, it's going to rain most of this week anyway. You all know that. By the way, we're also in podcast form, so that you can catch the show at a time that's more convenient for you if you're not able to listen when we broadcast the show live from 9 to noon Monday through Friday. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Amazon Music, and we're also on our own website at 830weeu.com. Simply at the top of the website where it says menu, click on that, go down to where it says podcasts, look for Feedback with Bill Saunders, and then look for the date of the show that you want to listen to. And it's all free. Yeah. Anyway, you might recall last week we were talking about... The brouhaha that NBC News created when they hired and then they fired Rona McDaniel because nobody there at NBC liked Rona McDaniel. They didn't like her positions on things. Well, Fareed Zakaria, who is a host on CNN, he decided to weigh in on that. He appeared on Real Time with Bill Maher on Friday to discuss McDaniel's brief contract that began and ended this past week. MSNBC hosts had voiced their disagreement with McDaniel's hire over her political views. And with that said, let's check out and see what Fareed Zakaria had to say on the Bill Maher show on Friday.
I think, as you say, you've got to remember, about a third of the country still believes that the 2020 election was incorrectly decided. That's about 85 million adult Americans. And to be fair to her, she has now said that she thinks Biden is the legitimate president. So really the question is, how much do you punish her for her past lies? And I think the point here is liberals are meant to believe in free speech. I mean, that is one of the foundational values of liberalism. And if you're going to say you're going to deplatform 85 million Americans, that's a lot of people. They say, no, it's not about that. It's that she lied. Well, you know, Bill Clinton lied under oath. I think last time I checked, he's been on MSNBC. They say, well, she's an election denier. Well, Stacey Abrams was an election denier about her own election, and they've had her on. The larger point is, you know, the book I've written is really about this four centuries of progress and backlash. And what you find is liberals often trigger backlash when they use illiberal means to get to their ends. You know, they're like, we're going to do what it takes. And the truth is, and I mean liberalism in a broad sense, liberal democracy, freedom of speech, constitutional, these are precious inheritances that we have. The way you're going to defend it, the way you're going to move it forward, is by not cheating, not cutting corners, not having double standards.
Ah, way to go for Reed Zakaria. I applaud you, sir. Absolutely, and I agree with every word you said there. That's Fareed Zakaria on Real Time with Bill Maher Friday night on HBO. According to Zakaria, NBC News could free itself of backlash over the situation if it had stuck to the fundamental values of liberalism and committed to free speech. He said liberals often trigger backlash when they use illiberal means to get to their ends. Liberal democracy, freedom of speech, the Constitution, the way you're going to defend it, the way you're going to move it forward is by not cheating, not cutting corners, not having double standards. Way to go, Fareed Zakaria. Love those comments. All right, love to hear from you. 610-374-8800, toll free, 888-401-0459. Let's go to Gibraltar and talk with Eli this morning. Eli, good morning. Welcome to Feedback Today.
Good morning. And, you know, people don't know when Easter comes up anymore. And that's WEEU's fault.
How's it our fault?
Well, you know, years ago you put music on that, you know, hey, you is the bonnet, you know, and all this other stuff. You know, it not I'm just making a joke that it's your fault. But you know, in the radios they don't have that like they used to have, you know. Certain like in Christmas time you have Christmas music. You know, in Easter they have Easter music, and they don't do that anymore.
Well, I do believe we broadcast an Easter a Sunday service.
That was on Easter.
Yeah.
Okay. Normally, like when it's Christmas time, when it's becoming to Christmas time, you know, they're putting music beforehand, you know, mm-hmm. and that kind of, you know, it rums you up to Christmas, you know, and they used to do that before. They don't do that stuff anymore, you know. Music plays a big part in how people feel and you know, and the culture and the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Well, I know that when we get closer to Christmas, I start playing bumper music that's Christmas
right.
music. But there is so much Christmas music that I've got a lot to choose from. But there's not much in the way of Easter music,
you know,
that I could use for bumper music. How unfortunately
when it's Thursday before Good Friday, you know, that all that music should be you know playing, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but let me share with you the dilemma that we face, especially when you do a show like this. You've got people who are religious who want to hear religious music, and then you've got the other segment of our listeners who are not religious who get offended. What's that now?
So you play no religious music. Or Easter music to not offend the people who are not religious.
Well, again, Eli, we're not a religious station.
And
when we talk politics here, it really doesn't blend in with that.
Well, it blends in with everything, you know, if they just did that a little bit, you know. I mean, and again, I'm not blaming WEU. You're not the only. They used to play that all the time, you know. And one of the other things I wanted to talk about was Fannie Willis. The DA.
Yeah, Fannie Willis, uh-huh.
Now, if the roles were reversed and she was a man and she did that with one of the people that was working with her, with a woman, you know, I mean, they would have thrown her out at a heartbeat.
So you think if she was a man that it would have been treated differently?
Absolutely, because then it would have been sexual. It would have been what they call that harassment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been very inappropriate, you know. and they would have thrown her out, you know, with, like they say, with the baby with the bathwater. They would have thrown her out right away, you know, because there is a double standards, you know. You know, women want to do these things, and that's fine, you know. Everybody to their own. But if she was a man, if that would have been a man, that would have done that, you know. If he would have been, it would have been Freddie, you know, and would have done that with one of his co-workers, you know, paying her more, you know, going on trips together, that they would have thrown her out.
Well, as far as I understand, Donald Trump and the co-defendants are appealing that ruling. That allowed her to continue to be the prosecutor in that case.
But the judge that was there should have thrown them both out, you know, because it was inappropriate what they were doing, you know. Even if it looked like it was bad, you know, they're supposed to be at a higher standard, especially with how everything was, and you're doing something that's never been done before, you know, and then you're messing around. Not good.
So you think that she should have been bumped off of the case? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Absolutely. If she would have been a man, you know, they would have thrown her out. They wouldn't have even thought about it, especially with that, with today's thing that, you know, men are taking advantage of women and, you know, all this other stuff, you know, oof. They would have thrown her out, and she would have never, and she would have had a job in nowhere, you know. It would have ruined her reputation, you know, or his reputation. But that's not happening with her, you know. And she was on an interview. She says on a CNN interview, "Oh, I don't think I did anything. I didn't do anything wrong," she said. You know, so she feels she didn't do anything wrong. And that was her words, not mine.
Interesting take.
Have a great day. I love your show.
Eli, thank you, buddy. Appreciate the call today.
All right.
Bye-bye. You take care. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Danielsville. David, I'm sorry we didn't get to you when you called. What was it, Friday you called in?
Yeah, I think I did, but that's okay. No harm. I'd like to talk about Easter. Every one of our Lenten services this year was about how much God loves everybody. And, in fact, yesterday, Sunday, in his sermon, he said, everybody shake the person next to you and tell them that God loves you unconditionally. So at that situation, I believe that God thinks every day is Easter. Because the purpose of Easter was Jesus dying on the cross. And then he went to hell to cover the sin debt of all the people. And he rose again from the grave on Sunday with a new body. And I believe that that's the kind of body we will have like he had when we are raised from the dead, or when Jesus comes back to get the Christians. If you're alive, you'll get a new body to go to heaven. And if you're in the grave, you'll get a new body to go to heaven also. So with that situation, I think, you know, he covers the debt, or he paid the debt of everybody unconditionally, if you ask. And he loves you unconditionally, no matter what you do or what you are. You know, he doesn't like the sin that you do, and there's consequences for doing sin, but you are forgiven if you ask, and you go to heaven. So, you know, I don't think Biden made a mistake, because that date was set up a long time ago, wasn't it? I don't really know.
Yeah, 15 years. It's been in the in existence.
What right would he have to change that date just because it was Easter? I mean, God loves everybody unconditionally. So, you know, it doesn't matter. I think Easter is every day for us because, you know, we need forgiveness every day. And that's what Jesus did on the cross. He covered our sin debt.
Good point.
And, you know, I think the big problem with our situation, our country, you know, can you imagine what God thinks? You know, the former president was elected because of the evangelicals, because they believed his words that he was going to be against abortion and he was going to solve the abortion problem, and that he did. But the evangelicals voted for him under that one thing. They didn't care what else he did that was crooked and corrupt, but because they said, he said he was going to, you know, take care of the abortion problem, that they fell for that hook, line, and sinker. And, you know, your Bible also says that any child that dies before they're old enough to make the decision to accept Jesus as their Savior, they will go to heaven to be with the Lord. And if their mother asks Jesus to be her Savior, she will be with that child in heaven. So, you know, and every child is a different age that accepts Jesus as their Savior. So you can't pinpoint that age to anybody. And on that note, I think my time is up.
No, you can. You still have time. Go ahead.
No, well, that's about all I got to say on that subject. You know, it's...
Well, you packed a lot in there.
God loves everybody unconditionally, no matter what you do or who you are or anything about you. And you know, this problem with the transgenders is a real problem, because we have two girls that came to our church that thought they were boys. And, you know, they did everything they could possibly do to become a boy. And, you know, they all profess to know Jesus as their Savior. So I don't know if they're lying or not, or if, you know, if they could possibly help what they did. You know, it's a real big problem as far as, you know, how you feel in your body. I think, you know, I never had the problem, but I feel sorry for the people that do have the problem. So,
Dave, thank you, buddy. Appreciated the call today and you sharing your opinion.
Well, I got another big opinion, but it would take another day.
Well, then call back in another day.
Okay. Will you answer the phone if I do?
Well, Sean will answer the phone, but if you're talking about whether you'll get on the air...
That's my problem.
No. Well, the problem is you keep calling in just before the end of the show or end of the hour.
No, you got it. You don't know the truth there. I think I was waiting 20 minutes.
Well, there were other callers. If you're referring to Friday, there were other callers ahead of you, and then you hung up on me.
Well, I didn't hang up.
No, you did hang up, didn't you?
No.
Because I was going to get to you. I was going to suggest. What's that now?
You said, sorry, Dave, we ran out of time.
Ah, okay. All right. And I went, that was true. We did run because you've got to, if you call in, see how you're on the air now. You're on the air now because you called in shortly after the start of the hour.
Well, I can't always do that, but I think I waited 20 minutes. I'm not sure. Maybe Matt the timer can verify this. I think I called 20 minutes before you know, the hour.
Yeah, and there were people that were ahead of you.
Yeah, two callers.
Yeah.
You're supposed to get 5 minutes each.
Unless I interrupt.
Yeah. Well, okay. Then you must have interrupted a lot on that call, because the two calls lasted the 20 minutes. So I'm not complaining. I'm just explaining. I love you, and have a great birthday and all of that stuff. Are you going to be going to Las Vegas?
I was waiting for you to say that.
Okay, goodbye.
No, I will not be going to Las Vegas.
Okay, bye.
Dave, as always, it's a pleasure, buddy. And don't forget, Dave, before you hang up, he hung up on me. Okay. If you're still listening, Dave, you got 7.5 minutes this time on the call. Oh, my. And that wasn't a collect call either. I always enjoy talking with him. I really do. We're going to take a break. Yes, I extended the time just so I got all of that call in with Dave when I should have taken the commercial break 5 minutes ago. What a guy. We'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we continue with this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Well, Fox News contributor Jonathan Turley, who is a lawyer and also a law professor at Georgetown University there in Washington, and I frequently refer to some op-ed pieces that he writes on various issues. Well, now he is slamming White House spokesman Ian Sams for attacking and taunting, his words now, not mine, House Republicans after they extended an invitation to President Biden for him to testify in his own impeachment probe. Now, before I share with you what Turley said on Fox News in reaction to Mr. Sams, let me read to you what Ian Sams wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter. Comer, meaning James Comer, who's the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, knows 20-plus witnesses have testified that POTUS, President of the United States, did nothing wrong. He knows that the hundreds of thousands of pages of records he's received have refuted his false allegations. This is a sad stunt at the end of a dead impeachment. Call it a day, Powell. Well, here's Jonathan Turley on Fox News reacting to that post from Ian Sams.
Well, the Republicans are not being deterred by any of this. What is really shocking is that Sams is actually with the White House Counsel's Office. I can't remember an administration that had a White House Counsel's Office that engaged so directly in taunting and attacking legal inquiries from Congress. I mean, this is an impeachment inquiry. It's the most important possible process that a president and Congress are engaged in. And yet you have a member of the legal counsel's office mocking and taunting that effort. The fact is that the president's public statements to the public stand completely contradicted. He lied. He lied when he said he had not spoken to business associates. He lied when he said he didn't have knowledge of these business dealings. The point about of this letter that is key is that in 7 pages, it reduces all of those contradictions to 10 simple questions that the president can answer, not engage in taunting, not engaging in the type of attacks by Sams, but to answer the questions for the American people. But the reason they're doing this is because they have license to do it. The media has no interest at all in the answers to these 10 questions. They bought into this illusion, essentially, that was created by the Biden team. And they've just gone too far. They can't ask any of these questions themselves. And that's what Sams and the White House know, is that there's not going to be any push by the media to answer any of these questions. Well, the problem here is the timing. When this case was filed, I wrote columns saying I have serious free speech problems with what they are doing here. President Trump is entitled to question the election. Democrats have done that. Democrats in the past have opposed certification of elections. That's all protected speech. And he could be wrong. I actually criticized some of his views at the time. I did not agree with a lot of these allegations. But he has a right to raise them, as do his supporters. And this does criminalize political speech in a way that is dangerous. The problem is the timing. What the prosecutors are arguing is, we'll prove it. Just give us time. Let us go to the trial. The problem is the indictment. It doesn't really make any true are standard racketeering claims. There's no evidence of a conspiracy other than the president saying, I think I won the election, and I think that there is election fraud or improprieties here. Many politicians have done that. So the question for the judge is, can he at this stage say, you are essentially criminalizing free speech? Most courts don't. But it's something to seriously consider. You know, that this would mean the prosecutors could pull any number of political groups through a trial before they get any real review of the free speech claims.
That's Jonathan Turley on Fox News. Well, since we were talking originally about the House Oversight Committee as it relates to Ian Sams' response to James Comer, the chairman of that committee, got something new here regarding that committee. Got this from the Washington Examiner. The National Archives has handed over just under 6,000 pages of documents to the committee as part of its impeachment inquiry into President Biden. The range of documents from the Obama administration when Biden was vice president were handed over this past week, according to documents obtained by Axios after the committee requested them last year. The various documents given to the committee include those relating to drafts of a speech Biden gave to the Ukrainian legislature back in 2015 while he was vice president, and communications involving Hunter Biden and his business associates. It also includes communications from staffers in the administration to, from, copying, or regarding Hunter Biden or Joe's brother James Biden. Republicans on the committee requested various documents from the National Archives as part of its inquiry last year, and the committee has received thousands of pages of documents in various batches within the past several months. The latest batch of documents comes as the House GOP continues its investigation into Biden and his family's business dealings, zeroing in on Hunter Biden's dealings with several business partners during and after Joe Biden's time as vice president. Earlier this month, the House Oversight Committee held a hearing on Hunter Biden's business dealings and invited the first son to testify publicly. Other former business associates of Hunter's, including Jason Galanis and Tony Bobulinski. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer invited Joe Biden to testify publicly before the committee as part of its impeachment inquiry earlier last week as that investigation continues. Well, I mentioned this with a caller earlier this morning regarding Fani Willis. Got this from The Hill. Former President Trump urged a state appeals court now to review a judge's decision allowing Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis to remain on Trump's Georgia 2020 election racketeering case. Judge Scott McAfee earlier this month ruled that Willis's once romantic relationship with Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade created an appearance of a conflict, but allowed the district attorney to move ahead with her prosecution once Wade resigned. Well, on Friday, Trump and eight of his co-defendants filed an application with the Georgia Court of Appeals urging it to take up the case, insisting Willis has a personal stake in the case and must step aside. The move was expected after McAfee handed down a decision enabling the defense to attempt to appeal his ruling before trial. And here's what the application reads, in part. While the trial court factually found D.A. Willis's out-of-court statements were improper and defendants proved an apparent conflict of interest, the trial court erred as a matter of law by not requiring dismissal and D.A. Willis's disqualification. It went on to say, this legal error requires the court's immediate review. Well, the court's rules gives the district attorney's office 10 days to respond to that application. And speaking of Fani Willis, despite a judge's scolding for her playing the race card during one of her speeches, she says she's going to continue talking about it anyway. This I got from Fox News. Willis, in a speech Friday, seemed to defy a judge's recent warning to not play the race card, insisting she'll talk about race anyway. During her remarks at the South Fulton Women of the Shield Awards, Willis said that, quote, it's hard out here always having to prove yourself two and three times. Recently, she remarked, they tell me they don't like me to talk about race. Well, I'm going to talk about it anyway. Willis's comments seem to be in reference to the recent order by Judge Scott McAfee, in which he said that her racially charged rhetoric of playing the race card, his words, not mine, was legally improper. McAfee's comments were in his decision that said Willis could stay on the 2020 election interference case against former President Trump if she removed special counsel Nathan Wade, with whom she was accused of having an improper affair. Willis did not immediately respond to a request for comment on this. In his order, McAfee separately took issue with a speech made by Willis at an Atlanta church in January of this year, when she claimed she and Wade were being scrutinized because of their race. While Willis later claimed not to be referring to the defendants in her accusations of race, McAfee warned that such a distinction was not clear. McAfee wrote the following: "In these public and televised comments, the district attorney complained that a Fulton County commissioner and so many others questioned her decision to hire Wade. When referring to her detractors throughout the speech, she frequently utilized the plural they. The state argues the speech was not aimed at any of the defendants in this case. Maybe so, the judge wrote, but maybe not. Therein lies the danger of public comment by a prosecuting attorney," McAfee wrote in his ruling. The judge found that Willis's reference to, quote, so many others in her speech at the church left ambiguous who she was accusing of racial motivations, coming dangerously close to compromising the case against Donald Trump. "Truth is, there's some challenges that come with being black, and I see so much greatness in the city that has so many great African-American leaders, and I appreciate all of the sacrifice that you all have had to make to be in these positions," Willis said to a crowd this past Friday. The event was hosted by the South Fulton Police Department, and it was held to shine a spotlight on 12 extraordinary women who've made remarkable contributions to law enforcement and community impact. So what is it with these people who thumb their nose at judges? You know, we've had the discussion about student loan forgiveness and Biden basically thumbing his nose at the Supreme Court after they ruled that he couldn't do it, and yet he's continuing to do it. And now there's this with Fannie Willis saying, well, you know, regardless of what the judge said, I'm going to do it anyway. What kind of message does that leave for the public and young people in particular when people in positions of leadership decide that they're going to ignore what a judge has ruled? That is my concern today. All right, with that said, let's go to the phones. We've got Carrie in Douglasville who wants to. All right, Carrie, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
Okay. I hope you had a wonderful Easter.
Thank you. And I hope you did too.
Well, of course, you eat too much and then you sleep a little bit. Everybody needs sleep. They say 8 hours, but I wish I could get 4 hours.
You and me both.
4 good hours would be 8 for me. But I do agree with what the gentleman did say. My son was singing the song, God Loves the Little Children. I just think we've forgotten. It starts at home. The family life has deteriorated, I think. But when you go into politics, my mother always said she never wanted to talk about religion, sex, or politics. Wait, religion, sex, or politics? Yes. And I guess we all should just be a little bit more thankful every day. And I used to say Christmas should be every day. You know, you're just a little nicer at Christmas time, or you should be. I teach my son to be nice every day. Matter of fact, I say mean people suck, so.
Amen to that, Carrie.
Yes, and have a wonderful birthday.
Thank you. That's what I was chuckling about, because that's what Sean wrote on the screen that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I had to get my 2 cents in so my husband don't have to hear it. He's off today. He was hoping or wishing he was working. But everybody just... just take a little time and be a little nicer.
Absolutely. Great message. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that.
And happy birthday, Bill.
Thanks, Carrie. Appreciate it. You take care now, okay?
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. I forgot to do this a few minutes ago. Oh, my. Where's my head at today? Matt in Chillington, I'll be with you in just a bit. Let me do a little bit of business first, and we'll be back with more feedback right after these words. Stay with us.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond.
All right, let's go right back to the phones. Matt in Chillington wants to talk about nighttime driving. Matt, good morning.
Good morning to you, Bill. First, I got to give a big shout-out to my friend Bill from Fleetwood. Not only was it a great call about car lights and inspections, until this morning, Bill from Fleetwood had the unique distinction of, Bill, of attending just about every WEEU live remote, all the shows, but never call any of the shows. And I was always on his case about that during live remote. So, my friend, until the next WEEU live remote, I hope you continue to participate in the on-air town square. Also, I can't help my friend David from Danielsville about the length of his calls. The only feedback calls I time are my own. And, Bill, on your main topic, I'm sort of in the same boat that you are with regard to glaucoma, nighttime driving. So I was happy to learn that some of the glare I keep seeing of oncoming vehicles may be related to car lights actually being manufactured brighter than before. But for almost 20 years now, I've been treated for glaucoma, and it all started with my seeing halos on streetlights. But fortunately, Bill, you know, with eye drops and two laser treatments about a decade ago, my eye pressures, knock on wood, have been under control. But the reason I still see halos is because my doctor said, yes, I have a small cataract in each eye, and seeing those halos is one of the symptoms of cataracts as well. Bill, I was told cataract surgery is similar to knee or hip replacement surgery. You will know when it's time to have it done, and they will be ready for you. But as long as my daytime or daylight vision is clear, I'm not going to get that surgery at the present time. However, Bill, I do try not to drive at night, especially on local roads, for the reason that every oncoming car looks like it has high beams on you. You pretty much said the same thing, didn't you?
Right, yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and on the other hand, it's going to sound strange, I have no trouble or concern about driving to nighttime Phillies games or other highway driving, because if you can picture it, you know, when you're on the major highways with four lanes, most times they're separated by like a median, a cement or whatever you want to call it there, separated by a median, and so oncoming lights are far to my left. So it's only, you know, local driving, and that's why I'm trying to reduce that. And finally, with this stuff, Bill, because you said you're a glaucoma suspect, I'm sure you are probably you and many listeners are probably familiar with the visual field test, which they recommend annually.
Oh, torture. Torture.
Yeah, and as a good reason, you know, for that, the reason the test is so important, Bill, this is why they refer to glaucoma as the thief of your sight. For anyone not familiar, you know, they put a patch over one eye, and then you focus on a light in the middle of a screen, and you press a clicker every time you see, like, little lights coming on in your visual field, you know, on the outside, inside, in between. But the reason it's so important, Bill, is because with glaucoma, you could be losing vision in one eye but never know it because your other eye is picking up what the first eye is not seeing. And so that's why they recommend that test, for the simple fact that if you don't get that test, you know, it'd be too late, because once vision is lost, as you know, with glaucoma, it is not reversible there.
Right.
So last month I did have a good result on my visual field test, but unfortunately, Mr. Saunders, my eye doctor doesn't believe me. I hope you do. When I keep telling him, the reason I did well on the test was because, as a retired teacher, Bill, I spent 2 hours the night before studying for the visual field test. You believe me, don't you? you?
I do, pal. I do. You get a gold star for that.
Nice to have a friend with that as well. But it is an important test and a very important topic. So thank you very much, Bill. Unless my timer is off, I'm now at 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Okay?
Oh, you're pretty good.
Hey, have a good afternoon, Bill.
You too, Matt. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye now. And we're going to take a break as we're about ready to wrap up the second hour of the Monday edition of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
News, weather, and traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
And that brings our number two to a close of today's edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square. We're going to break for news right now with Radio PA and ABC, and Bob McCool will check in with the sports for you to round out the top of the hour. And then we'll be back with our number three of Feedback. And don't forget, we'll be joined by Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan at the bottom of the hour. She'll be with me from 11:30 till noon today. And then on Wednesday, it is State Senator Scott Martin will be with me at 9:30 on Wednesday. He is the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. One of the things we're going to talk about are his feelings about the governor's budget proposal and much more. That's all here on Feedback. By the way, I'm off Thursday and Friday of this week, just as a reminder. We'll be airing Best of Feedbacks on Thursday and Friday, and then I'll be back on Monday. All right, with that said, it's time for news.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. And that dedicated text line, if you want to text in your opinion, is 484-650-3373. Well, there's an interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal I want to share with you. I'm not going to read the whole thing here. It's an op-ed piece written by Joseph Epstein, who is author of a book titled The Novel, Who Needs It? And the headline of his op-ed piece is maybe, and it appears in the Wall Street Journal if I didn't say that, the headline reads, maybe one day we'll get a president we feel good about. His subhead is, he'd be someone with honor, courage, and genuine desire to unite the country. It could be a long wait. So here's part of what Mr. Epstein writes in the Wall Street Journal. How has it come about that our two political parties can do no better than offer two richly flawed presidential candidates that a majority of Americans, if the polls are to be believed, would prefer just disappeared? I wonder if the road downhill in American presidential politics didn't begin in 1960, the first election in which television played a significant role. The telegenic John F. Kennedy stood for little apart from wanting the job, and Richard Nixon might not have stood for anything more. Dwight Eisenhower, a Republican, sent in federal troops to safeguard the children integrating Central High in Little Rock, Arkansas. Kennedy, a Democrat, was always chary about going too far in support of civil rights, lest he lose votes by doing so, and did little to aid the civil rights movement. Kennedy won the Pulitzer Prize for a book, Profiles in Courage, that was ghostwritten for him. His most famous words, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, were likely written by his chief speechwriter, Ted Sorensen. Difficult to know what Richard Nixon believed in, apart from wanting to hold power. The presidential lineup over the years since has been less than impressive. After Kennedy, we had Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, Gerald Ford, briefly, Jimmy Carter, the Bushes, father and son, Bill Clinton, the disappointing Barack Obama, disappointing because he could have done so much to heal the gaping national wound of race in American life, but didn't. Then on to Messrs. Trump and Biden. Ronald Reagan is for many an exception. He was exceptional in having true political beliefs, such as that communism was evil. But those of us who remember his time in the White House will recall he was regarded by nearly half the nation as a second-line Hollywood actor who all but sneaked into office. The sad fact seems to be that we haven't had an American president that the country has been able to feel good about for more than half a century. What would such a president be like? He, or I'm going to add, she, would in his person convey honor, courage, generosity of spirit. He wouldn't try to unite the extreme factions of both parties, the Bernie Sanderses and AOCs, the Chip Roys and Matt Gaetzeses. But through his own example and regular demonstration of what is best for the country, he would show the absurdity of both left and right-wing extremes. A member of one of our two major political parties, though he would be, he would somehow make clear that as president, he was hostage to no political party, but president of all the people. Daniel Patrick Moynihan might have been such a president. So too, J. William Fulbright, Robert A. Taft, or Paul Douglas, Dwight Eisenhower, whatever his shortcomings, was such a president. I wish I could supply the name of a contemporary politician who I think is qualified for the job, but sadly, I can't. Meanwhile, if you wish to be in touch with me about this on November 5th, don't hesitate to call. I'll be home all day. That's Joseph Epstein with an op-ed piece, part of an op-ed piece that I read here today from the Wall Street Journal with a headline, "Maybe One Day We'll Get a President We Feel Good About." What do you think? Do you think those chances are good that we will, given what we have to choose from today? All right, I'm going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with more feedback in just a bit, taking this a little bit early because I want to get as many of the commercial breaks in this half hour, so I've got more time to talk with Congresswoman Houlihan in the next half hour. So stay with us as feedback continues in just a bit.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU. The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Well, before the commercial break, I shared with you an op-ed piece that talked about will we ever get a president that we can be proud of? Well, with that said, let's talk a little bit about no labels. We've been talking about the no labels party movement for a while now, and it doesn't seem like things are going their way. This from the Wall Street Journal. The party suffered a series of setbacks this past week as the centrist group struggles to find a top-tier presidential candidate or lay out a public path to finding one. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a two-time GOP presidential candidate, indicated he didn't plan to run with no labels. There had been talk that he might, which had been encouraging him to lead a unity presidential campaign in recent days, according to people familiar with the matter. The group also lost its founding chair when Joe Lieberman, a key force behind the presidential effort, died last Wednesday following complications from a fall. Christie is the latest in a string of candidates who've turned down no labels, which says it has secured ballot access in 19 states so far. Potential candidates who've ruled out running on the ticket include Republicans such as former presidential candidate Nikki Haley, a United Nations ambassador under former President Donald Trump, former Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, and Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who's retiring from the Senate at the end of the year. Former Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who also had discussions with no labels about heading the ticket, said earlier this month he was declining to pursue a bid. Although the group has maintained it will go forward with its ticket, the lengthening list of rejections has fueled questions over whether it should scrap its plans without a marquee name leading its campaign. Former GOP North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory, a co-chair of the group, resigned earlier this month and some officials have privately expressed doubt about whether the group should move ahead with its presidential campaign effort. Well, with that said, and we've talked about how No Labels is trying to attract moderate voters. Well, there's another party that has formed that is doing the exact same thing. It's called the Forward Party. And you might recall former New Jersey Republican Governor Christy Todd Whitman. Well, she's among its founders of the Forward Party. And Craig Snyder, who is political director of the Pennsylvania Forward Party, will be on Feedback in a couple of weeks, basically on Tuesday, April 16th, during the 10 o'clock hour. He'll be here to talk about the party's platform and the various candidates that it's fielding this year in the election for statewide offices. So that's on Tuesday, April 16th at 10 o'clock. I'll be joined by the Pennsylvania Forward Party's political director, Craig Snyder, and we'll find out what his party is all about. Anyway, did you hear the latest regarding John Fetterman? I really feel for the guy. This I got from Fox News. Three top communications staffers in Fetterman's office are leaving for other left-leaning offices all within the span of a month. The departures come as the Democrat from Pennsylvania has made headlines recently for his stances on Israel and immigration, separating him from his fellow Democrat colleagues. Joe Calvillo formerly worked as Fetterman's director of communications both in his Senate office and on his 2022 campaign. A statement released earlier this month by the city of Chicago announced that Calvillo would be joining as chief strategy officer in Chicago Democrat Mayor Brandon Johnson's office. Fetterman's deputy communication director, Nicholas Gavio, shared on X last Friday that he would be joining the Working Families Party as Mid-Atlantic communications director. Gavio also worked on Fetterman's 2022 campaign, as well as in Senator Bernie Sanders' office. The Working Families Party is a progressive minor political party whose platforms include raising the minimum wage, increasing taxes on the rich, and environmental and educational reform. The party has previously been associated with notable Democratic politicians, including squad member Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Fetterman's press and digital aide, Emma Mustin, also took to X earlier this month to share that she was joining Senator Bob Casey's campaign office as a press secretary. Mustin worked on Fetterman's 2022 Senate campaign as well. Fetterman has been charting a different path for himself as of late, recently telling Fox News that he does not identify as a progressive, and slamming Vice President Kamala Harris for her statement that it would be a huge mistake for Israel to carry out an offensive without U.S. approval. Here's what Fetterman wrote in response on X. Hard disagree. Israel has the right to prosecute Hamas to surrender or to be eliminated. Hamas owns every innocent death for their cowardice hiding behind Palestinian lives. Fetterman has emerged as one of Israel's staunchest allies in the Senate in the wake of the October 7th massacre, distancing himself from other Democrats in Congress. Back in October, shortly after the massacre, Calvillo posted a screenshot on X of an office-wide email addressing the office's policies on sharing social media posts that did not align with Senator Fetterman's positions. Here's what it says, in part. However, if you want to sign on to something that is entirely anonymous, including not identifying you as a Fetterman staffer in any way, that is in bounds if you so choose, the October 20th email read. It went on to say, the distinction here is that you cannot use your status as a current Fetterman staffer to undermine John's position or otherwise make a public statement that is inconsistent with John's views. The email went on to stress the office's need to work together as a team following the breakout of war in Israel and Gaza. Fetterman responded to criticism over his pro-Israel stance when speaking to CNN's Jake Tapper back in January when he said the following, I don't understand why it's controversial to anybody to decide that you're going to stand with Israel in this situation. So it's a shame, and I have a lot of respect now for a lot of the positions that John Fetterman is taking here. what a surprise compared to how he came across during the 2022 election, and to see how he's actually turned out in office, it's like a 180-degree turn. But I'm extremely excited about some of the positions that he's taken, particularly the one on Israel and immigration in particular. But it's a shame that his staff members are jumping overboard, not wanting to work for the senator anymore because of their strong disapproval of his positions on that. But that's typical of liberals, isn't it? And that's what we've been talking about before. If they don't disagree with you, they do away with you. Oh, my, oh, my. Can we just get along, whether we agree or not? With that said, we'll take another break. We'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where our phone numbers are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And right now, I'm honored to have on with us today Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, who represents the 6th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania. That covers almost all of Chester County and, I believe, the southern part of Berks County and the city of Reading, too. Congresswoman, thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on with us.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
So, now you, let me go over some of the committees that you're on. You're on the Committee on Armed Services, the Subcommittee on Military Personnel, the Subcommittee on Strategic Forces, and the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and you're also a ranking member on the Defense Intelligence and Overhead Architecture. Did I miss anything there?
I am also working very actively as well on a group that's called the Quality of Life Panel as well, Military Quality of Life Panel, but that's actually all of the activities that I am undergoing while I'm in Washington, D.C., yes.
And you're a former U.S. Air Force officer, so we thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And as such, let's talk about, you talked about the quality of life panel. So look, can you share with us a little bit about that and what that's all about?
Sure. This was a panel that was put together by Speaker McCarthy at the time and Leader Jeffries. Don Bacon and I, Representative Bacon and I, Republican from Nebraska, Democrat, of course, myself from Pennsylvania, we both were put on this panel to try to think very hard and long about the quality of life of those who serve us in uniform. We wanted to make sure that we were addressing issues of pay, issues of spouse support, making sure spouses were able to be employed if they wanted to, childcare, as well as housing. So all of the issues that, you know, motivate people to enlist and then to stay active duty are the things that this panel was responsible for understanding. We put out a report about a week or two ago now as a result of that effort, and that report will then be rolled into what's called the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act. And the NDAA happens every single year, but this year it will be focusing a great deal on this quality of life panel's work.
Speaking of quality of life, one of the issues that we talk about frequently on this show is the fact that there are a lot of veterans who are homeless today.
Mm-hmm.
What's being done? Is there anything that Congress is working on to help alleviate that problem that is a growing problem in this country?
Yes, it's an issue as well as there are a lot of veterans who struggle with mental health issues as well. And so it is our responsibility in Congress to think about these issues and to make sure that we're taking care of those who have served and fought for us. And so there are certainly a lot of efforts ongoing, both with the Veterans Administration as well as with our local VA hospitals, to make sure that veterans in our community are properly housed and cared for and have proper access to health care, including mental health services. I did work extensively on a piece of legislation that focused on veteran suicide. We still lose about 22 vets a day to suicide, which is intolerable. And so this is something that we need to make sure that we're aggressively looking into. And not all veterans, frankly, are within kind of driving distance, so to speak, of a VA. So we want to make sure that we find them where they are. And so this piece of legislation was focused on making sure that people had a warm handoff wherever they were in whatever communities they are. As an example, my brother is an Army veteran, and he lives in Iowa, not very close to a veteran's hospital. And if he were to need any sort of care at all, it would be hours and hours for him to get to a hospital. So we want to make sure that veterans like him are able to access care and access, you know, accommodations, as an example, wherever they happen to live.
Ms. Houlihan, you recently hosted a ceremony in your district. It was a Silver Star ceremony, if my memory serves me right. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, sir. It was actually a fabulous story of a man, Captain Liss, who served in Vietnam. My father also served in Vietnam. But Mr. Captain Liss's story is fabulous. He ended up saving, I think, 87 people as he came in with his helicopter to rescue them from fire, from a line of fire. He returned, I think, five or six separate times to evacuate his comrades. And it's nearly, I'm now 56, so 56 years later, he was finally awarded this Silver Star. It took years and years and years of fighting for that recognition for him, but we were really honored to be able to pin that award on him in the last couple of weeks.
And is he a resident of Chester County or Berks County? Which one?
Yes. Yeah, he's a member. He's a resident of the 6th Congressional. He's a resident of Chester County. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. Okay. And I want to ask you a couple of questions about what's going on in Congress today, or maybe what's not going on in Congress.
Sure.
For a number of years now, here's another issue that we've talked about on this show. For a number of years now, Congress has relied on continuing resolutions to fund the government. And that's resulted in both parties blaming the other of potentially shutting down the government if they weren't able to work out an agreement. My question is, why can't lawmakers come up with a budget prior to the start of a fiscal year?
Yeah, you know, that's the $64,000 question. We would all be, we all try to figure out why that can't happen. And I guess what I would answer is, I never ran for anything before running for Congress. I never was involved in politics in this way before coming to Congress. And what I've learned since coming about 5 years ago now is that there are 435 members of Congress on the House side and, of course, 100 on the Senate side. And we all are, for the most part, you know, independent contractors, for lack of a better way of describing it. We all serve our communities. It's our responsibility to serve the people who brought us to Washington, D.C., but that means that we don't all find solutions in the same way, and we don't all think that the solution is the same. And so I think we've ended up kind of struggling because of a lot of things that have gone wrong in Washington to find our way to being able to fund the government properly. And to your point, that what properly means is that there are 12 appropriations subcommittees. We should have 12 appropriations bills, and they should be passed individually. But what has evolved over time now is, as you mentioned, what's called a continuing resolution, which is when we can't come to an agreement on what those appropriations bills are, and then also large, you know, packages that are multiple appropriations bills. We just passed one a couple weeks ago that was for six of those appropriations bills. And this is the art of the compromise. You know, we have to get together and we have to agree in order to move forward. And that's kind of, frankly, where we are right now, is these large mega buses or mini buses of appropriations packages. I'd love to see us get back to regular order and to getting it done in the proper way, but it would require a lot of change in terms of people's mindsets and mentalities and the strength of each individual committee and each individual appropriations chair.
I'm talking with Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, who represents the 6th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania, which covers most of Chester County and the southern part of Berks County, as well as the city of Reading. Congresswoman, you were first elected, what, back in 2018, if my memory serves me right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I was sworn in 2019.
And over that time, has your opinion changed at all about Congress at all? And if so, in what way?
So as I mentioned, it's a really complicated place. I really would very much like to see it work better. I spend a lot of time trying to make that happen. I serve on something called the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is a group of Democrats and Republicans who try to find the moderate middle and pragmatic solutions. I founded a group called For Country, which is a group of Democrats and Republicans who are of service, who've worn a uniform and who work together, although not ideologically aligned. We understand it's important to work together. I also work on a bipartisan group that I founded that focuses on paid leave. And so I think what I would say is Washington is broken as you see it from the television stations and journalists and the newspapers and radio stations you listen to. But there is still quite a lot of good things happening that are bipartisanly happening that you don't necessarily hear about because it's not, you know, it's not interesting. It's not click-worthy. It's not, you know, kind of salacious. And so I would point people to look for those things that are working, things like the problem solvers or things like the paid family leave working group or things like the quality of life working group for military personnel. Those are things that are working and that we are moving forward on.
I want to talk a little bit about your Republican colleagues, and I'm glad to hear you say that there's still bipartisanship down there in Washington, because what we read in the news or what we hear in the news seems to indicate that you've got the left and the right, and they're not communicating with each other. So it's refreshing to hear that there's still some form of bipartisanship going on down there. But I'd like to get your assessment of your Republican colleagues and well, for lack of a better word, the debacle of choosing and keeping a House Speaker. How has that impacted the productivity of this session of Congress?
Significantly. I think that we have historically voted several hundred times, you know, every 2 years or every session on bills, and a couple hundred of those bills end up becoming law. Right now, we're only about 9 months away from the end of this 118th session, and I believe only a couple dozen bills have actually made it all the way to the president's desk for signature because they haven't been able to get through the House and the Senate and of course, then to the president's desk to be signed. And that is, I think, one of the most historically low productivities of any Congress. It really does hamper us. What I would say, however, is there is a way to get out of this. And the way to get out of it is what's called the suspension calendar. And not to get too wonky on you on this, but what a suspension calendar is if the speaker feels as though he has two-thirds of the votes of the body, he can put something to the floor without having gone through the Rules Committee, and it will pass. And so what I would say right now is there are several bills that I know of that have those two-thirds votes that this speaker can put to the floor. One would be the aid for Ukraine and Israel and the border, the southern border. I know that would get two-thirds of the votes if it was put to the floor right now. And so this is a way that this speaker can, you know, make things happen. And I know that he does it at his peril from his right flank. But we have been clear as moderate Democrats that we will help him help, you know, us do our jobs if he is able to put those kinds of things to the floor for a vote.
Speaking of Mike Johnson, what do you think his chances are of surviving, or is he going to encounter the same fate that Kevin McCarthy had, do you think, or no?
So I'm not sure how it will all play out. My guess is, honestly, if I were a betting person, I would say yes, he will keep his job. And the reason why I say that is I think that there are people who would like to see the House work, and I put myself amongst those people. I want to see us vote on things that matter. And if this speaker has the courage to put those kinds of things on the floor, I know that it will upset, you know, his far right, the party's far right. But I know that there are quite a lot of pragmatic, moderate people in both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party who would like to see this body function. And so I would like to say, and I've asked the speaker personally, you know, please understand that you're the speaker for everyone, not just for the Republican Party. You're the speaker for the entire body. And he himself has personally said that he thinks the House should do the will of the people and the will of the body. And the will of the people is there for him to put these bills forward so we can vote on them. And then I believe he will likely keep his job. And if he doesn't, you know, frankly, we should all be willing to lose our jobs over principle and doing the right thing.
I'm talking with Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan. Ms. Houlihan, you recently secured nearly, what, $12 million in federal funding for a couple of projects in your district. Can you go over that with us, share with us a little more detail?
Sure. Every year we're allowed to submit a certain number of projects to those appropriations committees that I was talking to you about. We solicit input from the community. We got more than 40 ideas from our community. We have an independent board of folks who from all over our community who evaluate those proposals and rank them. We submitted for 15 of them, and were able to get 14 of them approved all the way through the process and funded. And they represent anything from the Reading Area Community College, Albright College, to fire stations, police stations for cameras, and other sorts of things that will help our communities be more safe. And it ended up about $12 million that we were able to give directly to our community. So I'm really excited about that.
One of the things that I understand you're very passionate about is national service. And in fact, did you not recently host a town hall on that subject?
Exactly. So what we try to do, and I want to also make sure people know that we're having our 85th town hall 2 weeks from today, and the 85th town hall will actually be a telephone town hall, and it will be covering immigration. But the town hall that you're speaking of was an in-person town hall, and it focused on national service. I really believe that national service is essential. I think wearing a uniform, serving your country in that way is one way to do that, but also there's many ways to serve your nation. I also happen to do Teach for America with the AmeriCorps organization, and I believe that that's something that makes our communities stronger, but also makes an individual stronger, too, because they have the chance to be exposed to people they wouldn't normally be exposed to and wouldn't normally work with. And so I very much am a champion of making sure that people have access to more opportunities to serve this country.
You said the upcoming town hall is going to be on immigration, which leads me to another question here. We've been hearing for years now that our immigration laws are broken. Do you agree with that? And if so, why are they broken, and why hasn't Congress been able to fix them?
They are broken. I'm very, very fortunate that my dad actually was a refugee and an immigrant to this country when he was five. He came here with his mom, who also survived the Holocaust, the two of them. And so I very much believe in that this is a nation of opportunity, a nation of the ability for my dad to come here as a five-year-old and then end up being a very successful naval captain, as well as a very successful business person, and contributed to this country significantly. We need more people like my dad. We need more opportunities. We need to make sure that we're continuing to be that nation of promise. But we also need to make sure that we have a secure borders, both our southern border as well as our northern border, as well as air, those kinds of and shipping and freight all need to be stronger, tighter. I think what I'm most frustrated by, and this is another good example of what should come to the floor for a vote, I very much believe that the bill that was passed by the Senate that talked about this issue of immigration reform and border security would absolutely pass if it were put on the floor of the House of Representatives. And so every 10 years or so, it's my understanding we come really, really close to solving this issue, or at least trying to solve this issue with new legislation. And we came within a hair's breadth of being able to do it a couple few months ago. But that piece of legislation is still alive. It still has the opportunity, if Speaker Johnson has the will, to put it to the floor to become the law of the land. And it will help our border, and it will help make sure that we have more people who are able to come to this country and be able to contribute to its growth and to its success.
I want to talk to you a little bit about foreign policy. Many members of your party aren't happy with the Biden administration's support for Israel. Where do you stand on the Israeli-Hamas conflict?
So first and foremost, I believe that Hamas is a horrible, horrible terrorist organization, and I believe that they need to be removed from the playing board, so to speak. I believe that what they've perpetrated upon the people of Israel is heinous and reprehensible, and I believe that Israel should have the ability to defend itself and to respond to Hamas's brutal attacks. I also believe that we need, as Americans, to make sure that all of the aid that we're providing to Israel, to Ukraine, to Taiwan and in Asia, to make sure that we are appropriating that properly, and that it is going to the purpose that it is has been designated for, and that it goes with the following of the law of or the kind of engagement, rules of engagement. And so it's my responsibility as the person who provides oversight on Intel, the Intel Committee and the Armed Services Committee, to make sure that that oversight is happening for the money and the resources that we as Americans are sending to Israel, to Ukraine and to other places in the world, that we are, that they are being properly accounted for and properly used.
There was a story that we shared on the show earlier today about Senator John Fetterman and his position on Israel that has led to the resignation of a number of his key staff members. And it seems like there are other members within the party who are growing dissatisfied with Fetterman's position on Israel. What do you want? Do you have a stand on that? Do you have a position on John Fetterman? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, I don't actually. In fact, I wasn't aware of that. I spent the last week actually in Korea. So my guess is that those kinds of things were happening while I was immersing myself in Korea and meeting the president as well as the foreign affairs minister as well as the Defense Department minister. So my guess is that that sort of thing happened while I was gone, and I really don't have much of a comment on that.
All right. As far as Ukraine is concerned, do you believe the House will approve aid for Ukraine when you folks return from your holiday recess?
I believe so, and I hope so. I have, as I mentioned, had a very personal one-on-one conversation with Speaker Johnson, imploring him to bring that piece of legislation that's already passed the Senate to the floor. A reminder that that piece of legislation includes Ukraine aid as well as Israel aid, as well as aid for Asia and humanitarian aid for both Ukraine and Israel and Gaza. He indicated to me that that was his intent, that when we return to Washington next week, that we would be voting for that aid. And so I believe him at his word. I believe him to be a good and honest man, and I look forward to voting for that package.
We're talking with Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan this morning. Ms. Houlihan, the GOP House leadership last week sent a letter to President Biden inviting him to testify during their impeachment inquiry. What are your thoughts on the impeachment effort that's underway now?
I got to tell you the truth here. This is just politics at its worst. I think that we as a body, the House, have huge responsibilities to govern and to legislate. And that is not to, you know, pursue, and this goes for both sides, you know, spurious accusations that you know, there's no there. And I think it's just an enormous distraction. I think it also weakens the kind of belief that regular everyday Americans have in the institutions such as the Congress. We need to do our jobs, and it needs to not be a circus. And some of these things are just circuses. And that's one of the things that's most frustrating to me in service in this particular job right now.
In your estimation, do you think the Republicans really want to be in charge of the House?
Yes, I do believe that the Republicans really want to be in charge of the House. And there are good people who are working hard to do good things on, you know, both sides of the aisle. What I would say is that there are some in the Republican majority who I think would be better off were they in the minority. I watch, you know, when you have the opportunity to watch a vote, and I would encourage people to do so, I watch the voting board and watch kind of a subset of the Republican majority, maybe 20 to 25, who vote no consistently on everything. And I just don't really understand why you would want to serve if there's nothing, literally nothing, that your party, because you're in the majority, does that pleases you. There's nothing that you're voting yes for. I question why you would run for office at all if you don't believe in this government and this nation.
One thing something else that we talked about on this show earlier today was a controversy that happened over the weekend where the president announced that Transgender Day of Visibility would be recognized on Easter Sunday, even though Transgender Day of Visibility has been on March 31st for, what, the last 15 or 18 years? and people were taking notice of the fact that the president didn't change it since it fell on the same day as Easter this year. Do you have a position on this? And if so, what is that?
So I am very much a supporter of the LGBTQ community and very much believe that we need to protect some of the most vulnerable members of our society. And in some ways, in many ways, the transgender part of our community really takes an awful lot of abuse and heat that I believe is undeserved. I don't really know. I was sort of vaguely following as I made my way back to the country that this was a controversy. My understanding is that it was at an historical day that the transgender awareness fell on that also happened to coincide with Easter. And as we know, the Easter moves every year. My understanding is that this particular date doesn't. But that's just my vague understanding of what was going on. And I very much believe that we ought to support every person in our society. I think that that's what good Christians, good Jews, and good Muslims, as well as people of all faiths, should do. That is, I think, part of what makes us a special nation as well, is that we care for everyone.
I just have a few seconds left. If you want to, again, share with the folks your upcoming town hall meeting, how people can sign up to participate in that.
So the next town hall will be a telephone town hall, as I mentioned. We try to make sure we do a town hall at least once a month, and we move it around the community, both in Chester and Berks counties. This one in particular will be telephone, as I mentioned, and you can find that information on my website, which is houlihan.house.gov. And my last name is spelled somewhat unusually. It's houlihan.house.gov. And this town hall will be 2 weeks from today.
Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, thank you so much for the time you shared with us today. I do hope you'll come back on at a future date, too.
I appreciate you very much. Thanks for that opportunity.
You're welcome. Have a good day now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. We'll be back with the final seconds of feedback on this Monday in just a bit. Stay with us.
It's the topics that matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
And that's a wrap for this Monday edition of Feedback. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Want to thank everyone who shared their opinions, whether it was in writing, by phone, or by text. Yes, you've got multiple ways to share your opinions here on Feedback, and I appreciate every one of them. Want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Welcome back, buddy.
No problem, Bill.
And we'll talk with you again tomorrow. Right now, we're going to break for news with Radio PA and ABC. And Bob McCool will have a check on sports for you before we head over to Dan Bongino from noon to 3. And it is the Ramsey Show from 3 to 6, all here on WEEU. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.